and now a romp through the Cold War. Seems like so long ago. Chilling scenes like this.
Good evening, my fellow citizens. The purpose of these bases can be none other than to provide a nuclear strike capability against the Western Hemisphere.
JFK and the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962, or one of Ronald Reagan's anti-Soviet punchlines back in the 80s.
I can go into the Kremlin, to the General Secretary's office, pound his desk, and say, Mr. General Secretary, I don't like the way President Reagan's running his country.
Yes, the rivalry of the U.S. and the Soviet Union for 50 years was the backdrop for spycraft and intelligence. Everything we know as the KGB, CIA, FBI, Interpol, MI6, all grew up in a 20th century time warp of high tech, high drama, high style.
You look pale, Mr. Bond. I hope I didn't frighten you.
No, you see, I've always been a nervous passenger.
Some men just don't like to be driven.
No, some men just don't like to be taken for a ride.
Call it all Planet Spy, and you can go there. Oh, the spies are gone, but here at the Discovery Center in Times Square on display is a half century's worth of camera, phone, radio, pens, and code books, spy tools, and spy gadgets.
I am in a time warp, literally. I'm looking at a decoder ring, a decoder sheet, a camera for taking pictures of documents, all from the nuclear crisis of the 1960s. This is not a spy museum. This is a spy flashback.
These are artifacts of the Cuban Missile Crisis, those 13 days in the fall of 1962.
Here in this exhibit that includes spy pigeons and weird submarines and motorcycles and kayaks all decked out in spy gear is author and spy expert himself, Tim Weiner.
This is the neat James Bond stuff that people know from the movies and novels. The reality is that espionage is a dirty, dangerous business in which people die. And the human element of how spies live and how they die is what's crucial here. What we're looking at is the great souvenirs of the Cold War. Now, here we're looking at artifacts of one of the very coolest covert operations the CIA undertook during the 60s and 70s. It failed, but it was a really nice try. In 1968, a Soviet nuclear missile-carrying sub, a submarine with nuclear weapons on it, sank in the Pacific Ocean about 1,500 miles northwest of Hawaii. And the CIA thought, boy, wouldn't it be cool if we could raise this nuclear submarine off the Atlantic, and then we could figure out what the Soviets have got.
The Glomar Explorer was this special boat that was outfitted with possibly the technology to pull a submarine off the bottom of the sea?
So the problem for the CIA is that nobody had ever done this.
Right.
So they thought, okay, who could build us a ship that wouldn't look like a secret CIA ship in the middle of the Pacific trying to raise a Soviet submarine? Aha! Howard Hughes. Howard Hughes builds ships. Howard Hughes has got hundreds of millions of dollars. Howard Hughes loves secrecy, and we could pretend it's an oil drilling rig.
So that's what it looks like. You can see it on this goofy plaque. As much of a waste of money as this probably was, it seems like a kind of cool thing.
It was a really nice try.
The outlandish and the daring all here on display, including a little something from the Eisenhower days.
All right, this stuff is great. Before U2 was a band, it was what?
It was a plane, which was a wide-winged plane that could go to the edge of outer space. And look down with cameras and take pictures. So, you know, the estimates in the 50s before the U2 went up was, oh my God, the Soviets have thousands, tens of thousands of nuclear weapons aimed at the United States. So they sent the U-2 up, and they later sent a spy satellite up so they could actually count the missile sites. And there weren't 4,000. There weren't 400. There were four.
And so this is artifacts from the famous shootdown of one of these U-2s that was a big scandal between the U.S. and
the Soviet. Oh, it was a disaster because President Eisenhower was trying to make a thaw in the Cold War in 1960, his last year in office, and he had a peace summit set with the Soviet leader, Khrushchev. So the CIA said, we just want one more flight before the peace summit. And that flight went down. Gary Powers, the pilot, was held as a prisoner for 2 years. He was put on trial. He confessed everything. Over there, you'll see the suicide pin that they gave him in case he was ever shot down. He didn't use it.
That is totally crazy. So you'd poke this into yourself and, what, cyanide, and you're dead?
Yeah. So the U2 was a great thing because it actually eased the fear of leaders like President Eisenhower and President Kennedy, and it showed that the Soviets weren't 10 feet tall. They were 6 feet tall, just like us. So now here, this is the real nitty-gritty.
This is good stuff here.
All right. Forget submarines, forget spy planes. This is how you actually do espionage when you're in a hostile capital.
All right, now explain how this weird-looking rat carcass here represents what's called a dead drop.
All right, let's say that we work for the CIA and we're in Moscow, or for that matter, Beijing today,
You do work for the CIA, but I don't.
I just covered them.
Yeah, okay, fine. All right, you say that.
All right,
sure.
And you want to exchange information
right.
With a spy. You're going to put a chalk mark on a lamppost saying, I'm here, and we've prearranged a dead drop. I'm going to give you the money. And you're going to leave the information. It could be a dead rat. It could be a hollowed-out brick, like a paving block.
And they're all here. There's a hollowed-out brick over there with money in it. There's literally a dead-looking rat here
and
with money sticking out of it.
And you're going to walk by each other like two ships in the night. And he's going to pick up the money, and you're going to pick up the information.
And this stuff worked? I mean, people walking around with bricks, it wasn't suspicious?
It was not a foolproof system, John.
I see.
People got caught. People got imprisoned. People died. But this is how you... worked in a city like Moscow in the Cold War, and believe me, there are people trying to work like this in Tehran and other dangerous places today.
As you were reporting on the Cold War, did you think of items like this as souvenirs, or were they tools for a mission? And in many ways, the spies that you covered and that you reported on, it was all about them as people. It was like more their characters than it was the tools and gadgets they had.
If you go to the Baseball Hall of Fame, you see bats and balls and uniforms. These are the bats and balls and uniforms of the Cold War, of the great struggle between the United States and its enemies to get the upper hand, to know one another by spying on one another.
As author Tim Weiner says, the great game of the Cold War is over. Here in this Hall of Fame, it's the balls and bats and suicide pins. But it made me wonder, in a world where everyone has a phone that can call anyone in the world and is also a camera, what's a James Bond to do?